We've all lived so many incarnations. We take that on faith, although we can remember some of them, either in dream or intuition or by travel, running into people, we begin to find out things we didn't know. But each time we enter into one incarnation, it seems so intensely real. And we enter into time, and we go through this amazing cycle of youth and middle age and old age. And then only once in a while do we step out of it. And I'm sure as the moment of death comes, we remember again, oh yes, here we are. And I think when the moment of birth comes, we think, oh yes, here we are. And then you have these great masters with whom we have these ongoing, far transcending, nothing to do with this time and place, everything to do with eternity relationships. Master tells the story of Jesus appeared to the great master Babaji. And these two great spiritual figures, one with a body, which is Babaji, one without a body, which is Jesus Christ, feel responsibility for helping to move not just a handful of people, but the whole civilization, the whole world, the whole globe, from one level of understanding to another. And together they agreed that they would send a messenger. And this whole line of gurus, step by step, is the fulfillment of that prophecy. And the cycle of building that energy so far transcends our little ideas of time and space. We think Jesus says to Babaji, we'll send a messenger, and the next thing you expect is that a messenger will be sent. But that's not what happens. Lahiri comes. Sri Yukteswar comes. Then Master is born and trained by Sri Yukteswar and sent to America 100 years ago. We're 100 years already from the time when Master first landed on these shores. It hardly looks like the prophecies of Babaji and Jesus, or let me phrase it differently. I hope that they know what they're doing. When you look at the planet the way it is, and you see the way everything is going. But what you see is these two simultaneous flows of energy happening. One where darkness, confusion, doubt about the very existence of God, ever-increasing egoic commitment to egoic fulfillment, just seems to be empowered more and more every day. And simultaneously, you have a spiritual revolution happening all over the world, in all languages, in all countries. The thought is coming into people's minds of brotherhood, of peace, of attunement, of the inner reality being the true reality, of the global village, of the folly of bigotry, of the equality of all men, of all women, of all races. And millions upon millions of people have started into this new reality by reading one book written by one man, Autobiography of a Yogi. Our human ideas of how God works in this world are just that. It's just our ideas. Our human ideas, even of how our own spiritual life goes forward, they're just ideas. What the divine is doing with us, through us, for us, side by side, is so much more glorious than anything we can imagine. in his poem, Samadhi, which Master suggested that we memorize and repeat every day, he speaks of the experience of God as being enjoyable beyond imagination of expectancy. Such a beautiful use of words, isn't it? Enjoyable is the first part of it. Isn't that what the heart longs for? In joy, but also to enjoy. To just be who we really are in freedom and in happiness, but beyond even what we can imagine or expect. So the great challenge of relating to Master is to be able to lift our consciousness even to imagine. Swamiji writes in The Path when he speaks about Master, he talks about how wonderful he was, how charming he was, how delightful he was, how loving, how supportive, how encouraging. And Swami said, few were able even to imagine the magnitude of the spiritual revolution to which he was calling them. That everything we call ourselves is really just a dream picture that we cling to, and that the real power of God takes us to a place we beyond imagination of expectancy. But God understands us, and so he incarnates in these beautiful, charming forms, with these beautiful faces, and these beautiful personalities, and this marvelous voice. The first time you hear Master's voice, you just don't know what to think. I remember hearing it. It was so outside of any even idea I had about what he would sound like. Swamiji loves especially the very informal talks that Master gave when we finally had recordings, not of Master declaiming to the multitudes and exhorting us on to God realization, but just sitting quietly and talking with us, telling us stories, making jokes, just coming into our hearts with a completely different vibration that causes us both to remember and to forget how many incarnations it's been, how many times we've been children, how many times we've been men and women and soldiers and kings and invalids and heroes and cowards, just over and over. And through it all, the Master just walks with us, each of us individually, just like Krishna danced with every gopi. Swamiji quotes in his book after Master passed away, when Master's body was lying on the bed at Mount Washington. You may have seen pictures of it, and you know he has such an extraordinary face. And Swami talks about Taramata staring at Master's face. Now the body is uninhabited, although the spirit of Master was still there, to the point even where when Dayamata was sitting alone with him in the middle of that night after he died, he actually shed a tear for their sorrow, which she caught on her handkerchief. But Taramata was just gazing at his face, and in her love for him and in her impersonal wisdom, she said, think how many, many lifetimes it took to make a face like that. You know, to make a face that could shine with infinity. And of course, all our faces can shine with infinity, but Master's actually did. Master took the infinite and put it into that body. And through those eyes, Swamiji talking about the last smile of Master. Well, that's not quite the last smile we have on the altar, but it's very close to it. Master was very close to the end of his life. And when he would look out and see all of us meaning those who were in front of him at the time, and us whom he could see coming, you and me and all of us who will come after us. And he looked through those eyes and he gave us his consciousness, because that's the only thing he came to give us. He didn't come to give us success or lack of success, health, well-being, happy relationships, buildings, communities. All of that is the means to an end. But the end is he came to give us God. That's what he had. That was his single gift. And that's the one thing that we should always ask for. We should never feel that he's too busy or doesn't want to be bothered, or I need to solve this myself. The more we hold ourselves back from him, the less he is able to come in. Let go of who we think we are. Why would we want to do that? Because then Master can tell us who we really are. You know, this name, this idea, all of these experiences, the age. Just sitting here just a few minutes ago, I suddenly had this extremely vivid feeling of myself at 2, probably. And it was so, I don't have vivid memories of that age. But there it is. We've just always been. There is this unchanging self. And that's what Master is. He is that unchanging part of ourselves. And when you look into his eyes, he's loving us. And he's seeing all the little ups and downs. I understand why you feel that way, he says. But his answer to it is to look even more penetratingly, you know, into our eyes through his living photographs, into our eyes, until who he is becomes who we are. And he will just keep looking at us through the eyes of those photographs, through the inner light that comes to us when we meditate. He'll just keep looking at us until we realize that we're looking into the flawless mirror of our own nature. It's quite a promise. And it's a promise so much bigger than we can even imagine, that we have to pray for the grace to be able to embrace it, to be able to stare into those eyes with so much courage and freedom and detachment and surrender, that pretty soon that face becomes our own. And that face ceases to be a human face at all, but is just the face of pure light. This is our destiny, Swamiji said to us once at the end of a really exquisite satsang. He said, first, when divine realization comes, you look back at all your incarnations. Just spend a moment. Think of what you know about this life. Think what you may have intuited about every other. Just use your imagination with every history book and novel you've ever read. That was all us. This was all me at one time or another. Swami says you look back at the whole cycle and you realize all of it was just a dream. It seemed to happen, but it never did happen. But in that cycle of seeming time, the only thing that was real is every time we had a true experience of the divine. And it came through many times, many, many times, especially as we get closer to the end, which is where we are now. The only thing that's real is when we touched into the spirit. And then Swami smiled at us and he said, "You're going to get it right sooner or later," he said. Why waste a few million years? That's a really good question, isn't it? If we're going to get it right sooner or later, let us look into the eyes of Master. And is it Lahiri who said, eventually, why not now? Through thy grace, why not now? Bless you.
I am but an empty vessel. I am but an empty vessel, filled with the presence of God. Oh, filled with the presence of God. I am love, I am joy, I am peace. I am but an empty vessel. I am but an empty vessel, filled with the presence of God. Oh, filled with the presence of God. I am love, I am joy, I am peace. I am but an empty vessel, empty vessel, empty vessel. I am but an empty vessel, filled with the presence of God. Oh, filled with the presence of God. I am love, I am joy, an empty vessel. I am but an empty vessel, filled with the presence of God. Oh, filled with the presence of God. I am love, I am joy, I am peace. I am but an empty vessel. I am but an empty vessel, filled with the presence of God. Oh, filled with the presence of God. I am love, I am joy, I am peace. I am love, I am joy,
quenchless yearning for the light, for my love, your true home. Long your heart has played the dancer, long you've toyed with me the shadows of the treasures left behind you. Soul, long you plumbed the dark for answers, long you begged from beggars, empty hands, gifts of life they too were seeking, gives none could share. Friend, how long will you as long as you seek your home in a land where all are strangers, love locks her door. Leave to the weak his craven life, to the coward leave his dreaming. Oh, my saint, wake up, reclaim the light, seek the truth behind all seeming. Leave to the weak his craven life, to the coward leave his dreaming. Oh, my saint, wake up, reclaim the light, seek the truth behind all seeming. Silence of soul in cave of love, find my abode. Listen, listen, whispering within your soul. Of joy, sweet songs of sadness, of quenchless yearning for the light, for my love, your true
Let's meditate together now.
When Swamiji was 16 years old, his father wanted to buy him a tuxedo. He'd grown close to what they expected would be his full man size, and his father wanted to invest in what he assumed his son would need for his life, because that was the society that the family moved in, of formal wear and relatively high, not extraordinary wealth, but in the upper classes of America. And Swami was 16. He wanted to be a writer, a playwright, a poet, perhaps, but his life was not well defined by any means. But he said to his father, "Don't waste your money, Father. I'll never wear it." And in fact, he said, "I never intend to earn enough money to pay income tax." And it was extraordinary that Swamiji was so certain. He didn't know what his life would be, but he knew what his life wouldn't be. That he was not going to follow in the ordinary footsteps that his family had laid out in front of him. He knew he was born for something else. And what followed, because it was 6 years from that point before he met Master, was an increasingly desperate search for something that was worth giving his life to. And he wasn't inclined to be looking for God. He was looking for truth. And he was an artist, so he was inclined toward beauty. But any image of God that had been given to him was not attractive to him. And so he put that aside. His mother was very devout, but she was devout to a Christian church that Swami just found uninteresting. And then he found Autobiography of a Yogi, and he told that story over and over again in the end of his life, the last few years of his life. It was just about the only thing he would talk about, was finding Autobiography of a Yogi, recognizing Master's picture, reading the book, leaving everything behind in 1948. I mean, that was not the 60s or the 70s when I did such a thing, but it was completely unknown. And he just walked away from his life, from his family, from every expectation of the world without the slightest hesitation. He was so thrilled, as he put it beautifully at one point. He said, "From early childhood, I felt like I lived completely in a world of my own, which no one else shared." He said, "When I read Autobiography of a Yogi, I realized that Master and I lived in the same world." Just think of what that means on so many different levels. And from the time he clutched Autobiography of a Yogi to his heart and carried it out of the bookstore to his last breath, and he was 85 or 86, he never hesitated, not once. Swamiji had been Master's son when Master was William the Conqueror as a king. Swami was Henry I. And dedicated his entire life to fulfilling what his father had started, to bringing it into a lasting form, which he completely succeeded in doing. When Master was Ferdinand III in Spain and had the divine assignment of maintaining Christianity as the culture of Spain by driving the Moors off the peninsula, Swami was Alfonso X. He dedicated himself to his father's mission and carried it out to completion as far as he could, developed what his father started. In this lifetime, when Master was a monk, Swami was his spiritual son. And he dedicated his life to completing what Master started. When I was about 16, I remember telling my father, wasn't about a tuxedo, but it was the same question. I said, "I'm not going to live the life that you've lived. I just knew I wasn't. The world that he had entered in and lived very honorably and relatively happily and successfully in, I could tell that it was not mine. And I had no idea what was mine, absolutely no idea. And I wasn't looking for God. I was hardly looking for truth. I just knew what I wasn't looking for. No, that's not fair to myself. I was looking for truth. Then I saw Swami Kriyananda. He walked into the room. I was there to hear him speak. He walked into the room, and all of a sudden, I knew what I was looking for, which is that consciousness. And what he did, what he gave to me, what Swamiji gave to me, was a life. And all of us who have been drawn to Master through Ananda, we have to thank Swamiji every day. He took what his father, in this case his spiritual father, started, and he manifested it in a form that all of us could see. And he created a life for us, a life of dedication. And some of us, all of our lives are this, but all of our lives have been transformed by what Swamiji did. And it takes tremendous amount of magnetism to manifest on the level that Swami Kriyananda manifested. You can look at it just in terms of the material accomplishment, but that was really the least of it. The power of divine attunement, of unrelenting determination and willpower, every hour of every day, not for himself, but in attunement with Master. And of all the things that Swami accomplished, it never meant anything to him. What mattered to him was very simple. I'm serving Master. And his entire way of thinking about life was, what more could I do? And he would talk about and he would think about every idea, everything he could remember in principle or in specific that Master had recommended. Unity of religion, education for children, a new idea of how married couples could relate to each other. What do we do about money? What about creative art? What kind of music? What kind of poetry will uplift us? How should we worship? How do we behave in America? Should we be monks and nuns? What kind of homes should we build? Where should we put our temples? You know, how beautiful should things be? How simple? How plain should we be? How elegant? Every question. I said to Swamiji at one point, everything you do it because that's the way Master did it. Is that so? It may seem like an obvious question, but Swami was so humble about it. He never said, oh, lo, this is the way Master does it. He was just very spontaneous and natural and very at ease in life and very fun. Just so lighthearted and so natural about everything. But there was always a continuous thread that no matter what he was doing, it all emanated from, there was this continuous thread that ran through it. And that thread, that was what I said, everything you do is because that's how Master did it, isn't it? He said, of course. And I said, and everything that you don't do is because that's not how Master did it. He said again, of course. Now, I want to express to you that it's not like he imitated Master. He didn't adopt a Bengali accent. He didn't wear the same clothes that Master wore. But he tuned into the essential vibration of who Master was, and everything else flowed naturally out from that vibration. I'm going to give you a personal example that may sound too small to count, but try to tune into it if you can. I never knew how to cook, and then I was given the job of cooking when I first came to Ananda. Swami's actual words were, I was so mental, I didn't actually even taste food, and he was correct. But I gradually learned to cook, and then I cooked for Swamiji for many years, not as his dedicated cook, that came later, but I would just cook for him. And after a time, I realized that I had developed a way of cooking, a style of food, the way I prepared, the way I presented. And one day I realized it was very simple. I cooked the way Swami wanted. I just cooked according to the vibration that he had emanated. And that's simply what I did. And from that example, I really understood what Swami said, that we tune in to this essential magnetism. And it doesn't have to look anything like what anybody else looks like, or even what the guru looks like. But we look exactly like him. And Swamiji's power that he planted of his discipleship, meaning this is what it is to be in tune with Master. And it isn't just the style of life we have and the music and the artistic expression. It's so much deeper. It's so much deeper. It's this, well, it's the ray of grace is what Swami himself called it. He was always trying to help us understand that these are the faces of our masters. These are their life stories. These are their the unique coloration of their window onto the divine. You know, Lahiri's way versus Sri Yukteswar's way. But what really comes through them is this one ray of grace. It's a beautiful phrase to meditate on. And what we're all trying to be in tune with is not Swami Kriyananda or even Paramhansa Yogananda or any of the others that we've mentioned, Jesus, Babaji. What we're trying to be in tune with is the ray of grace that flows through them. No matter all of our efforts, a whole lifetime of trying, an entire many incarnations of trying, is all just to remove the obstacles of our self-interest and our false ideas of happiness so that we can open ourselves to that ray of grace. Swamiji lived it. He said, I no longer know where I end and Master begins. He said, at one point he said, it's not just my thoughts, it's just my consciousness. I no longer know where Master ends and I begin. I no longer know where I end and Master begins. Think about that. Just think how free that would make us. That's the ray of grace. That's the ray of grace we rise on. All of us who have ever been touched by the Spirit, we remember all the days and nights of effort and the tears and the resolutions and the picking ourselves up when we failed and trying again. But when the ray of grace matches us, well, just like Swami said, all of that becomes a dream. And vaguely we remember that it happened. But all that we know that happened now is that I am in the presence of God, lifted on that ray of grace. Well, like a kitten in the mouth of its mother, that nothing about who I thought I was or where I was going or where I've been. Yes, it comes back sometimes, but none of it matters. That's what Swami lived for us. That's the door he opens for us. None of these masters is an end in themselves. Everyone is an open doorway, literally. We walk through it into a field of light. We ride that ray of grace into that infinite light. We are so blessed. I often just say to myself, I am the disciple of a great master. Forget everything else. Really doesn't matter. I am the disciple of a great master. All other self-definitions are meaningless. That one opens the door to everything we seek, to the ray of grace we'll ride into the infinite light for all eternity.
No one can love me. In this world they do not know how to love me. In this world, Mother, no one can love me. In this world they do not know how to love me. Where is their pure loving love? Where is there truly loving thee? There my soul longs to be. There my soul longs to be. In this world, Mother, no one can love me. In this world they do not know how to love me. In this world, Mother, no one can love me. In this world, they do not know how to love me. Where is their pure loving love? Where is their truly loving thee? There my soul longs to be. There my soul longs to be. In this world, Mother, no one can love me. In this world, they do not know how to love me. In this world, Mother, no one can love me. In this world, they do not know how to love me. Where is their pure loving love? Where is their truly loving thee? There my soul longs to be. There my soul longs to be. In this world, Mother, no one can love me. In this world, they do not know how to love me. In this world, Mother, no one can love me. In this world, they do not know how to love me. Where is their pure loving love? Where is their truly loving thee? There my soul longs to be. There my soul longs to be. In this world, Mother, no one can love me. In this world, they do not know how to love me. In this world, Mother, no one can love me. In this world, they do not know how to love me. Where is their pure loving love? Where is their truly loving thee? There my soul longs to be. There my soul longs to be. There my soul longs to be.
life that is given to God. Blessed, blessed the ways where his feet have trod. All the joys that human heart can know, may his love on you bestow. May all dangers from your path be moved, all delusion by his truth disproved. Blessed, blessed the life that is given to God. Blessed, blessed the light that shines from above. All the wealth for which man ever schemed, all the beauty ever dreamed, all the gains for which men sigh and moan, will be harvested in God alone. Blessed, blessed the heart open to his love.
Let's meditate now.
prayer. Before we sing together, we're going to sing, O Master, after we pray. Take all the feeling of God and Gurus that we have gathered together here. We repeat these prayers often many times, but we must never let them become automatic. Every time we say the name of God, we affirm an aspect of God or say the name of one of the Gurus, we should be deeply conscious that these are holy names and what we are invoking is a holy presence. So, with that thought, with that awareness in our hearts, let us pray. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, dearest friend, beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, beloved Master, Paramhansa Yogananda, saints of all religions, dearest friend Swami Kriyananda, we offer our lives in service and devotion to your cause of self-realization for all. May thy love shine forever on the sanctuary of our devotion. And may we be able to awaken thy love in all hearts. Om peace. Amen. Now let's sing together this beautiful song about Master.
Has come for all to see that there's but one reality upon the earth and high above, truth that all was made from love, a love that calls to us to fly above the hills, above the sky, above the storms, above the pain, a land where peace and laughter reign. Oh, Master, may thy joy fill our days. Oh, Master, may thy wisdom every glow that only seems into the light, the inner sun, into the truth that we're all one. Help us to find in every hour, in every thought, in every flower, a joy that spans eternity, the truth. truth that makes us ever free. O Master, may thy joy fill our days. O Master, may thy wisdom guide our joy.